Turn your Bible, if you will, please, to a single text of Scripture for the message this morning. Joshua chapter 15 and verse 63. We shall read other verses in the message, but the text is Joshua 15 and verse 63. The scripture in the record of Joshua's recordings says, "As for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out. But the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem unto this day." Those of you who know me best and know me well know that my own personal greatest passion in the ministry is to preach the gospel, to exalt Christ, to herald those blessed evangelical truths of saving grace, to engage those timeless grand themes, sin and death, heaven and hell, paradise lost and paradise regained, the new birth and salvation, Calvary and the empty tomb. These are the grand timeless themes which are my delight to declare. These are the coals that fuel the fires of my preaching passion. Those of you that know me know that. I've often said, and my wife has heard it many times, I've said to people in many different places, just pick a text for me. Pick a text for me anywhere in the Bible, Old Testament or New, and I can preach the gospel from it. I love to preach the gospel. When I first met my wife, if I can barely dimly recall that far back, I carried a red Bible, and I'd had it embossed in high school. I'd had it embossed on the front, John Suttles, Evangelist. We often laugh about that Bible now. But I thought I would be an evangelist. The simple truth is, I love preaching the gospel. I love to declare the evangel. But as I am in the providence of God, the pastor of this flock, I am given to the task of feeding God's sheep. And in so doing, we turn to our study today in Joshua's record of a faithful generation, and take up a subject this morning which is neither popular nor easy. I take from our text this morning this unavoidable title, "The Fatal Tragedy of Not Finishing." I read again our text in Joshua 15, verse 63. "As for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Israel could not drive them out. But the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem unto this day." I would invite your attention as well to notice with me in the next chapter, chapter 16. Verse 9 and 10. and the separate cities for the children of Ephraim were, according to the inheritance of the children of Manasseh, all the cities with their villages, and they drave not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer. But the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day, and serve under tribute. I'd invite you as well to look at chapter 17, verse 12 and 13. Yet the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. Yet it came to pass when the children of Israel were waxing strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. Here, as we come to our text and our study as we are going through the book of Joshua, we come here to this place, and right here, in the middle of this glorious record of unparalleled triumph and victory, there was the miraculous record, the record of the miraculous crossing over Jordan. There was the miraculous and startling fall of the city of Jericho, and every little Sunday school child knows that story. There were repeated victories and strategies of countless battles and countless cities falling like parched grass before a prairie fire. Right here in the middle of all of that glory and wonder, we stumble almost like Saul falling on his sword on these words which stagger the mind and paralyze the heart. The children of Judah could not drive them out. We have, up to this very moment in the record, been marching victoriously to the cadence of a triumphant drum roll, which took no prisoners and knew no defeat. And then suddenly, without warning, without a hint of anticipation, we fall heart sick on this notice. Israel has quit. Quit. As if by some inexplicable force, from some undefinable source, the trumpet falls silent. The scene falls still, and the work of conquest is arrested. What? Our hearts simply must ask, what can this possibly mean? It'll be the design of my message this morning to answer that question. What could it possibly mean? But in order to that design, let me first just give you what I will call a timeline in Israel's failure. And when I give it, notice the digression in it. I had actually written this outline and intended it for our New Year's sermon, but I decided against it. And so I give it to you now. A timeline in Israel's failure. First, notice with me the Lord's faithfulness. The Lord was altogether faithful. Joshua, if you look at chapter 21 and verse 43, and the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers. And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which ye swear unto their fathers, and there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. There failed not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. Note that God did not fail Israel. Everything the Lord covenanted to do, as Luke referred to in his prayer already, everything God covenanted to do, he failed nothing in it. But then next, notice, Israel failed to finish the work assigned to them and thereby forfeited ground that was originally included in his grant. I read it to you in our text this morning, Joshua 15 and 63. But look as well at the statement in Judges chapter 1 and verse 28. And it came to pass when Israel was strong, they put the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out. God didn't fail Israel. Nothing failed of the Lord's promises. But Israel failed to drive them out. And then, thirdly, not only did they fail to drive them out, Israel formed a league with them. A league with these unholy contaminations in the body of Israel, these whose remaining presence was itself an affront to God in His grace and glory. Notice Judges chapter 2, verse 1, the angel of the Lord came up to Gilgal, to Bochim, and said, I made you go up out of Egypt and brought you into the land which I swear to your fathers, and I said, I'll never break my covenant with you. I said, I'll never break my covenant with you. I brought you up here, verse 2. Ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this thing? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you. They shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. Not only did Israel permit them to remain, but then we look around and they have formed leagues with them. I said this is a picture of Israel's decline, a timeline of Israel's decline. First, the Lord keeps all His promises. Then Israel disobeys and doesn't complete the work. And then they form leagues with these enemies of God. And then fourthly and finally, find out in Joshua chapter 22, having failed to finish the work, they secondly form leagues with forbidden elements, and now in Joshua 22, they contaminate the pure worship of their God and substitute an adulterated, polluted religion for appointed piety and mistake well-intended formalism for genuine righteousness. You see in chapter 22, the 2.5 tribes with the nation settled, the 2.5 tribes start to go back to their own families, go back to their own location across the river. If you read this chapter, I'll not take the time this morning, but if you read this chapter, they started to go back to their own land, and they got to the river, and they decided to stop there and build an altar unto the Lord. It was an unauthorized altar. God had never approved this altar. Israel had one altar. Israel had one place of worship. Verse 10 tells us that they built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see to. Oh, this was an impressive affair. They built a great altar to see to. But you see, there's just one problem. God had not authorized this altar. And so we move from Israel failing to drive out their enemies to now making leagues with their enemies to now introducing a worship that God has not approved. Do you see the digression? You see the timeline? All of this started in chapter 15 of Joshua and verse 63, the first mention we have that Israel did not drive out God's enemies. They quit. So then, now I return to my intended question. What does it all mean to me? What are we to learn here from this inspired record of Israel's failure to finish? I give you this record, from this record, I give you three needful considerations. And I give them all three to you. And then we shall look at them individually, probably not today. Three needful considerations from this record of Israel not finishing. Number one, I give you the cause of an incomplete conquest. Secondly, I give you the dangers of an incomplete conquest. And thirdly, I give you the fruit of an incomplete conquest. And with these three, let us be duly and deeply warned. I said this is not a popular nor an easy subject, but one that is much needed by every saint in this building. When we come to chapter 15 and verse 63, here is the first sign of the end of a faithful generation. We have been studying now for, 2 years. How long? I don't know how long. We've been studying for a long time the book of Joshua. We've been talking about it and drawing lessons from it from a faithful generation. And now when we come to chapter 15, verse 63, here's the first sign of the end of a faithful generation. So I give you first the cause of an incomplete conquest. Notice in this text that Israel did not, quote, officially stop the conquest. I don't read of any meeting of council that they held. I don't read of any law that was passed. I don't read of any formal undertakings that resulted in verse 63. There was not anything official, but they just simply stopped fighting. They just stopped. They merely suspended the work of conquest for now. There was no direct plan. There was no concerted agreement passed. They just simply stopped. They might have said, well, we'll get back to that later. We'll get back to that later. But meanwhile, while Israel was inactive. The corruption of the Canaanites was not. It was very active. Calvin said, this text furnishes no excuse for the people, nor is it set down with that in view. For had they exerted themselves to the full measure of their strength and failed of success, then the dishonor would have fallen on God himself, who had promised that he would continue with them as their leader until he should give them full and free possession of the land. So it was not God who failed. Therefore, it was owing entirely to their own sluggishness that they did not make themselves masters of the city of Jerusalem. This they were not able to do, but it was because of their own torpor. There's a grand old English word for you children, you students. T-O-R-P-O-R. It was altogether due to their own torpor, their neglect of the divine command, for their love of ease. These were the real obstacles, not the Canaanites, the Israelites. This passage, Calvin said, is deserving of notice. We ought to learn from it to make vigorous trial and use of our strength in attempting to accomplish the commands of God, and not to omit any opportunity, lest while we are idly resting, the door will be shut. Then Calvin says, well worth remembering, a moderate delay may have been free of blame, but a long period of effeminate ease in this manner rejected the blessings of God he was ready to bestow. Calvin here refers to their sluggishness, their torpor. You look the word up, it means numbness. It means a lack of mobility. Their sluggishness, their torpor, their neglect of the divine command, he says. And a long period of what Calvin called effeminate ease that describes too many of us. The simple truth is, when you look at the record up to this 63rd verse in the 15th chapter, the simple truth is that the blessings of God had already been so rich to them. Their acquisitions had been so great. The bounty had been so abundant that they were lulled into a comfortable ease of negligence. And that is where a lot of Christians are. I said they were lulled into a comfortable ease of negligence. They quit. They failed to finish. They were well and truly, in the words of Amos chapter 6 and verse 1, they were well and truly at ease in Zion. And herein is our lesson. The great danger for the child of God is to molder in the shade of God's peaceful administrations and suspend the hard work of further conquest. I'll say that again. The great danger for the child of God is to molder in the shade of God's peaceful administrations for us and suspend the hard work of further conquest. last. Simply put, we just want rest in the bounty of present possessions and suspend any further warfare indefinitely. It's just easier to rest in the shade of God's blessings than it is to keep up this battle any further. I hope the Holy Spirit of God will help you to hear what I'm saying this morning. We just want to rest in the bounty of our present possessions. Suspend the warfare. We think within ourselves, there's just no reason to fight anymore. For any more fighting is unnecessary when I'm already in possession of all that I need. Isn't that right? Look in your own heart this morning, as I've looked in mine. Oh, as a believer, it's so easy, is it not, for us to come to a place that we feel like we've achieved a mark with the Lord, that we can just stop the fighting and just relax. I don't want to fight with this flesh anymore. I don't want to fight with my family anymore. I don't want to fight with the culture around me anymore. I just don't want to fight anymore. I think I'll just suspend that for now. None but the immortal, blessed old Bunyan could so beautifully paint the fatal picture as he did in his Pilgrim, when we open to that scene at the Hill of Difficulty. Dear old Bunyan says, "I looked then after Christian to see him go up the hill, where I perceived he fell from running to just going, and from going to clambering on his hands and knees." You see, this is the Hill Difficulty, because of the steepness of the place. Now, about the midday to the top of the hill was a pleasant arbor made by the Lord of the hill for the refreshment of weary travelers. Thither, therefore, Christian got, where also he sat down to rest him. And then he pulled his roll out of his bosom and read therein to his comfort. He also now began afresh to take a review of the coat, the garment that was given to him as he stood by the cross. You remember that. And thus pleasing himself a while, he at last fell into a slumber, and thence into a fast sleep, which detained him in that place until it was almost night. And in his sleep, his roll fell out of his hand. And as he was sleeping, there came one to him and waked him, saying, "Go to thy aunt, go to the aunt, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise." Proverbs 6 and verse 6. And with that, Christian suddenly started up and sped him on his way and went apace till he came to the top of the hill. Now when he got to the top of the hill, there came two men running, amain, timorous, and the other mistrust. And then the Christian says, "Sirs, what's the matter? Do you run the wrong way?" The timorous answered and said, "They were going to the city of Zion and had got up that difficult place, but," he said, "the further we go, the more danger we meet with. Wherefore we turned and are going back again. We're not going to fight any longer." "Yes," said Mistrust, "for just before us lie a couple of lions in the way. whether sleeping or waking, we know not, and we could not think if we came within reach, but they would presently pull us in pieces. And then said Christian, you make me afraid. But whither shall I fly to be safe? If I go back to my own country, that's prepared for fire and brimstone, and I shall certainly perish there. And if I can get to the celestial city, I'm sure to be in safety there. I must venture. To go back is nothing but death. To go forward is fear of death and life everlasting beyond it. I will yet go forward. But you remember, he goes forward. He does go forward in this story. He goes forward, but after a while there's trouble. And he reaches in his bosom for the roll for comfort. And guess what? It's gone. The roll is gone. At last he bethought himself that he had slept in the arbor that's on the side of the hill, and falling down upon his knees, he asked God's forgiveness for that foolish act. Then went back to look for his roll. But all the way he went back, who can sufficiently set forth the sorrow of Christian's heart? Oh, going back is painful. Going back is painful. Sometimes he sighed. Sometimes he wept. And oftentimes he chided himself for being so foolish to fall asleep in that place. Thus he went back, carefully looking on this side and on that all the way he went, if happily he might find his roll. Oh, he said, oh, that I had not slept. They decided not to fight anymore. They decided to rest. Oh, listen to me. The cause, I'm trying to give you my first point, the cause of this failed conquest was their carnal desire for rest. It was their fatal propensity to inertia. We want to relax as quickly and as long as we conceive possible. You see, when we're comfortable, we don't want any further fighting. As Christians, we sometimes reach a place in our experience with Christ when we're just comfortable. We don't want any more trouble. We don't want to testify again. We don't want to see the faces of those that disapprove. We don't want to go forward anymore. We've gained enough ground. We've got plenty here. We don't need to go any farther. You see, the reality is we're too soft. We're too easy on ourselves. Don't you hear it, the children when they're in school? Don't you hear the children? Teacher says, I want you to write such and such for me. And they'll scribble a couple of lines and run up, and what did they say? Is this enough? Had not gained enough ground here. Oh, we can laugh at it with the children, but I'm afraid I do the same thing in my walk with Christ. I come to a place and say, Lord, have I done enough? Couldn't we just leave those Canaanites over there? Do I have to face them? Our torpor, our sluggishness leads to our neglect of the divine command, and the result is a cessation of the conquest, and God's enemies in our lives are left. First, note with me, first they're allowed to remain undisturbed. That's the first step. We just leave them undisturbed. And then we begin to form leagues with them. And before we even sense our danger, we're adopting their idols for ours. That's what Israel did. Not only was there a laziness in this business, but I must point you again to the fact there were also mercenary motives. You remember I read to you in Job and Joshua, Judges. They put them to tribute. You see, they figured out a way to get them to make them pay. They're going to pay us some money here. So Israel kind of, they thought they got a double dip. Not only did they not have to fight these people, now they're going to get rid of them. You don't reckon that would ever happen to a Christian, do you? They not only stop putting off the flesh, stop putting off God's enemies in their lives, stop putting off the things that are displeasing to the Lord, but they figure out some way to make it to their advantage to keep it. There were mercenary motives. Oh, no wonder. No wonder. The New Testament charges us so boldly in these words in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore take upon you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil days. Take on the armor. Can I just say it to you in a very simple way? There are no Caribbean cruises in the Christian work. There are no tropical island getaways in the path of righteousness. There is no early retirement. There is no place to suspend your labors. The night cometh, said John 9 and verse 4, the night cometh when no man can work, and there's no surer way to bring night in your soul than to suspend the work of conquest, killing God's enemies. Before your last breath, if you suspend your labors, before your last breath is laid, is drawn, and you slip, as the words of the poem says, slip the surly bonds of earth, find yourself in deep trouble. Who told you? I ask all of our hearts, my heart, who told you that your attainments were sufficient? Who told you that your sanctification was complete? Who told you that all of Satan's strongholds were gone from your life? Who told you these things? Who told you that you could not drive them out? Whoever it was, they lied to you. And all of Israel's subsequent history proves it. All of Israel's subsequent history proves it. fatality of failing to finish. Finish. Finish the work. Israel ceased to drive out Canaanites because it was simple. They just wanted to stop fighting. And they figured out a way to turn that into mercenary advantage. I've seen times in my life when my carnal flesh convinced me that it would be a lot better to make a league with someone than to drive them out. Too many times in our lives we find a hard place and somehow we congratulate ourselves that we've done enough. We just need to stop here. And we can make a way to make that profitable and not have to fight anymore. God help us. May God help us.